Leo sat at a work table in the shop compartment. He was eating stew from a steel tray and reading a book on 20th century blasters. The door slid open. Leo scowled. No one had better dare intrude upon his inner sanctum like this. Not even...
Diggs!
The bulky chief armorer rose then, holding his hands up. It was indeed his assistant who had entered, behind a leveled Benelli 12 gauge. The unlikeliest pair of human beings Leo had ever set his bulging blue eyes upon followed him. A tall, gaunt old man with lank, graying hair, wearing a stand-up collar and a frock coat, and an albino kid with ruby eyes.
What's the joke, Dix? 'Cause I let you know in advance, I ain't laughing.
The joke, Leo, is that you're gonna live, provided you don't go making any false moves.
Because the line twisted through the mountains, and even more because it was hard to pick up line breaks at night, even with a headlight and low-light TV, Magog hadn't picked up her usual speed. She wasn't going that much faster than a fast run. So JB told himself, as he put the sole of his boot against the baggy rump of Leo's coveralls and pushed him out the door of the interrogation chamber.
See? Nothing to it. Who's next?
They had recovered their belongings, especially their blasters, from the armory car. They had also toted along a few extra items JB thought might come in handy. He'd had to impose a crushingly strict discipline on himself, because he was just like the proverbial kid in a candy shop. He had made himself load them up with self-heats Leo kept stashed away so he could eat when he felt like it without interacting with other members of the human race. Primarily, anyway.
JB, have you flat lost your mind?
Christy shot Mildred a sudden grin and leapt into the darkness.
Where one so fair leads, I can but follow. By the three Kennedys!
Jack was next.
Hey, toi!
Mildred stood staring at JB with giant eyes.
Ladies first.
You were jealous back there, weren't you, Jim?
Hell, of course I was, Millie. That bastard was so pretty I wanted to screw him myself.
Yeah, he was fine, wasn't he? Now, John, don't you dare not follow.
And she was gone.
Dark night. The things a poor boy got to do.
He jumped, hit, bounced, and rolled. To everybody's surprise, they all survived, with only bruises and contusions that wouldn't leave any lasting marks to speak of. Even Leo, who'd been ejected with his wrists bound behind him. When JB hurried forward to set him free, Leo was sitting beside the tracks, staring after the train. To the smaller man's surprise, the look the erstwhile chief armorer turned on him was calm.
I oughta hate your treacherous ass, Dix. It's like you just hauled me out of paradise.
Tell me about it.
That's one reason I don't hate you. I know it chafes your bunk just as much as mine to leave that behind, or be left behind by it, as the case may be.
Here, let me help you up.
Thanks. You know, the other thing is, I was starting to get the feeling everything was heading south in a hurry. Just didn't feel right. Bunch of damn military assholes on the train anyhow. Never did like them a damn.
JB had salvaged the Browning A5 that Leo especially loved. It was returned to the big bearded man with a pocketful of shells, on condition he not load the weapon until he was at least a mile clear of the others. He agreed, glumly, and stomped off back along the tracks toward Taos, muttering to himself. JB watched the bear-like shadow slowly dissolve into the darkness. Then he turned and walked back to the others. They were clustered around Christy, peering at something she held in her hand. Curiously, he walked up and stood on tiptoe to peer over her shoulder. In the palm of her hand, she held a heart-shaped locket. A tiny red light glowed at its top. 15 minutes later, the armory car blew up in a brilliant white flash. The explosion cut the wagon in two. The front coupling immediately snapped free of the carriage ahead, as it was designed to do. The next 15 cars followed the shattered wag off the tracks and down a 15-yard slope into a little stream, rushing to hurl itself into the mighty Grandy Gorge.
We do not involve ourselves in the affairs of the outside world.
The technomad woman, Rhonda, stood defiantly before the companions. Though she was fat, it appeared to be the hard fat more often seen in men. Flames jumped head high from brushwood piled in a clearing masked by a low ridge from direct sight of the tracks. Christie wasn't too worried about discovery by Magog's crew. JB had set his bomb to go off when the train was miles beyond where the friends had made good their escape. With no way of knowing exactly when the fugitives had bailed, and plenty on their hands to keep them busy, it was increasingly unlikely the General's makeshift army would mount a search back along the rail line, and less still an effective one. And even if they did, Christie thought, it might just force the arrogant bastards to face reality. She stood next to the fire, where every one of the 20 or so people gathered in the clearing could plainly see her. Her hair flowed out around her head in a sort of halation, like flame itself. Despite the protracted abuse she'd been subjected to short hours before, she felt as if charged with electricity, as if the energy of the living earth was flowing up through the black soil and soft-shored grass and the soles of her feet. A male technomad, taller and narrower than Rounda, and with thinning gray hair, tried to soften his comrade's blunt words.
"The one you call Paul, and whom we knew as David or Mark, among other names, appears to have done both you and us a disservice. We are sorry to disappoint you."
"Speak for yourself, Cedric."
"What was that, Lightning?"
Lightning, a younger man, was one of the few technomads to show a weapon, a crossbow slung across his back that seemed primarily made of neither wood nor metal. What exactly it was crafted from was unclear in the wavering light.
"Paul knew what he was doing. He was one of you, wasn't he?"
"There are ways in which he is. He tends to walk his own path."
"Like the rest of us don't?"
"We have our traditions. The rail ghost ignores them when he sees fit, as this ill-conceived gathering shows."
"Stifle it, Lightning."
"Whatever, Cedric."
"You people got your ways, like everybody. This general does, too. Guess which set he plans to make everybody follow?"
"We don't help mundanes."
"But you do help yourselves, don't you? JB's right. The general is set on conquering the whole continent. He thinks he's about to get his hands on the means to do so. What do you think is going to happen to this secretive, free-roving lifestyle you're all so protective of?"
"Others have tried to bring us to heel before, Christie. But our history is long."
"Could be. It's about to have run its course."
"Has anybody with the General's means tried before? There's nothing in the world to compare to that monster rail wag of his. Paul told me that, and I believe him. And you do, too."
"What do you mean by that?"
"You follow it, don't you? You keep close track of where it travels and what it does. That's why you've kept turning up so conveniently since Magog first smashed its way into our lives. The rail ghost wasn't the only one chasing after the train."
"Don't push your nose where it doesn't belong. Mundanes who pry too deeply into the technomad world tend to vanish from their own, without a trace."
Jack had been sitting on the grass with his knees up and his arms around them. Now he leapt to his feet, eyes blazing, hand on the hilt of the short sword-sized buoy.
"Big talk, cheap. Threaten Christie, fight Jack."
"Ooh, I'm scared. I can't stop trembling."
"Hold on now. Let's everybody leave the safety on for now. If we really want to go blasting somebody, we both got plenty of enemies just a few miles down that steel road, as I don't reckon anybody will deny."
As JB spoke, he raised his open palms, each to the level of the respective would-be combatant's eyes. The armorer knew that as long as predators, especially hot-blooded young male ones, kept gazes locked on each other, tensions would soar. Break that lethal lock of forward-mounted eyes, hunter's eyes, you might just break the spasm before hammers dropped and blood flowed. Lightning and Jack each took a step back, and then, as if to the same signal, crossed their arms and turned stony faces to the fire.
"That's better."
"If what you say is true, Christie, so what?"
"First, it shows that no matter what you say to outsiders, you're all too well aware of the threat the General poses to your way of life. So you must know it's about to go up. Far up. You know of the Great Redoubt, don't you?"
"We have heard of it. Legends."
"You know better than that. The General knows more. He knows where to find it. It's where he's taking Magog just as soon as he repairs the damage we did getting away. And when he gets his hands on what's inside, tell me, you who worship your freedom and technology, what happens then?"
An uncomfortable stillness had settled upon the technomads.
"He will be supreme."
"So will you simply give up and go extinct? Or will you stand up to be smashed down by Magog backed by all the might that brought about the big war?"
"But our traditions..."
"Blow this.
Another young man, whose name was Corwin, stepped into the light. He was tall and stiletto thin. To go with his inhumanly fine features, he had green hair and pointed ears. For all her intuition, Christy couldn't tell whether he was an actual mutie or whether it was a dye job in makeup.
Let's not delude ourselves. We all pay lip service to the traditions, but it's not as if we don't break them where and whenever it's convenient. And even if we fool ourselves, Christy, don't let us fool you. We're bound together by shared culture, sure, and bonds of kinship and friendship, too, some of us. But we're not any kind of monolithic. And I, for one, have no intention of allowing this madman, who everyone here knows sure as Nuke Death is every bit as much our enemy as these people's, to make himself omnipotent and then come hunting us down like rabbits. We're people of technology. That's our link and life. But if that means more to us than just another superstition handed down from before Skydark, then it imposes on us a cultural obligation to at least make an effort to think rationally. Not slam our minds shut like the bigoted, mud-ignorant mundanes we're all so proud of despising. Christy, you have a plan to stop the General getting his claws on the Great Redoubt? You might say, I'm all ears.
All right. First, understand I'm not asking you for any major interference in what you call my world. I don't ask for you to involve yourselves directly at all. All I ask for is transportation, which I hope and believe you can provide. And maybe a little extra muscle power.
Say we provide these things. How do you plan to stop the General becoming all-powerful?
I'm going to kill him. Him and his giant armored train.